Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 113 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John. And today we are going to be talking about building a community around a brand. That's actually a topic I don't really know a lot about. So when I asked my Twitter friends who I should talk to, they told me to talk to this person named Rosie Sherry. She is the community manager in the Actress, but she's been building communities for years now. Now, building a community around a brand can become a competitive advantage. We've seen brands like HubSpot, GrowHackers.com, and ClickFunnels do just that. In this episode, Rosie, once again, she's a community manager in the Hackers. She shares how to build a vibrant community. In episode 113, you'll learn first, common mistakes to avoid when building an online community. Second, how to organize events that create content that engages the community. And third, her principles around building a community. Now, before we jump in, I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable advice and tips from this episode that Rosie gives out in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes about this podcast episode when you can just steal mine? You can take all the tips and apply to your business and accelerate the growth even faster. Go to growthtoday.fm/130 to get it now. I only keep this up for the next 7 days since I published this episode, because I only keep up the latest episode cheat sheet and then I take away this one. So download this now before I take this episode cheat sheet away. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you can, and I can learn from, like Rosie. Thanks to 42 Agency, they work with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get $500 in free consulting, you can visit them at growthtoday.fm/42, that's 42, or find the link in the description. Enough about me, let's jump in my chat with Rosie. Hey everybody, I am excited to chat with Rosie. She is a community builder who has built Miniserial Testing, and also now she's community manager at Indie Hackers, which a lot of people who are listeners to the show might be familiar with. How's it going, Rosie? How is your Friday going?
My Friday is good. Thanks, Ramley, for having me. It's sunny here at the moment.
Nice. Yeah, same here. It's sunny in Toronto, Canada. It is getting cold. It's 10 degrees Celsius at this moment, which I am not happy about. Summer is ending.
It feels like it's still here at the moment.
Oh, really? Oh, what's the temperature? What's the temperature in Brighton?
It was 20, 25 this week.
What? Come on. Yeah. Jealous. Yeah. I think every day this week in Toronto has been below 20 degrees Celsius. So yeah, it's getting cold. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the show to talk about community building. And it's something that I'm actually not that familiar with. I came from background in data and running ads. So I really wanted to chat about community building with somebody, and you are the person to talk about it. But before we do, I just want to warm up the conversation a bit. You said that you read books when you get a chance to. What was the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
Well, since we're on the topic of community, like I'll mention the last community book that I read, which is The Structure of Belonging by Peter Block. It's a bit, intense, but it's got a lot of kind of like deep insights into community building. And it's definitely worth a read.
Interesting. Okay, I will check that out. I expected something like fictional, but like that, I'll check that out for sure. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, in the topic of community building, how did you become community manager at Indie Hackers? Like, did somebody introduce you, or like what was the story behind your you starting leading community at Indie Hackers?
Yeah, I guess there's like a couple of angles to it. It's like if someone wants to kind of run or lead a community, you kind of have to, in my opinion, be one of the people that you're serving. You have to know what the community is about. So I previously I bootstrapped Ministry of Testing, which is a community for software testers. And when Indie Hackers started, I reached out to Cortland to do one of his kind of early text interviews. So I was one of the first few who did that. So and that went all right. And I remember also I saw people, or I can't remember if it's someone who posted an interview or Cortland posted an interview to Hacker News, and it kind of, you know, got a lot of traffic. So I thought, oh, I'm going to try it as well. And I tried it, and then it, you know, got a, you know, quite a lot of upvotes and stuff like that. So from that, he kind of knew of me, I guess. And then a couple of years ago, I was stepping back from Ministry of Testing. I'd kind of spent time like handing over the reins to someone else, just because, you know, I just didn't want to run it anymore. So, and I was just looking for new things to do. I was dipping in and out of Indie Hackers, and I had kind of like wanted to spend more time hanging out there, but I struggled to justify the time to do it. And then I saw Cortland post that he was looking for some social media help. And I was like, oh, well, I could do that. I'm just, you know, I was just like looking for something different to do. And I thought it would be interesting to kind of get some insight about how the community was run. So we spoke, and then just after we spoke, he basically said to me, I don't want you to do the social media. I want you to run the community. So I was like, yeah, all right.
Just like that, huh? I just ask you. It's cool that, you know, there was already that trust built from the beginning. You already have a side gig that, you know, Ministry of Testing, I mean, that you built out and that led you to the role. Did you have any community building experience before Ministry of Testing, or that was like your first foray into building communities, Ministry of Testing?
Yeah, I had done like a meetup that was a Girl Geek dinner meetup in Brighton, where I live in the UK. And that was really successful for like a couple of years. It was like fully booked out every time I organized one. And that was my first experience, and that kind of made me like research and start dipping my toes into what community building was.
Interesting.
And then after that, I helped co-found or run like a co-working space for a couple of years as well. And that was like before co-working was like really popular. It's like 2010 kind of time. So yeah, and that, you know, I think both those experiences kind of just opened my eyes, and I just got really excited about the concept of community building that I had never really considered before that.
Interesting. I'm going to ask, I'm guessing Indie Hackers is fully online. I don't see they've done any events, and you've done Ministry of Testing, which is in person. I'm curious what, you know, is the skills applicable to both, where like you're building community in person versus online community, or what are some similarities and differences between in-person versus purely online communities?
Yeah, well, Indie Hackers has meetups run by members. So it does have events, but, you know, we don't actively manage them. With Ministry of Testing, it started out as an online forum community. And then we started doing events like 3 or 4 years after the online stuff that we were doing. But, you know, I think like I view like both Ministry of Testing and Indie Hackers as kind of like communities of practice. And I think those types of communities really benefit from like just meeting people in real life. Obviously now it's more like in real virtual life, but, you know, it's a similar concept. It's not, you know, it's never going to be the same as meeting in people in person. And like with the events that we did at Ministry of Testing, just with people like connecting online first and then getting the opportunity to meet after they had so many conversations and you know, connections beforehand, it's like, you know, it really kind of brings something special to the events we ended up hosting. It's like they felt at home as soon as they arrived, that, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like they felt comfortable. They felt like they could, you know, just start conversations immediately rather than getting, you know, bored with like small talk, which is quite often what happens at, you know, conferences or events that you don't really know the people that are attending.
Interesting. That makes sense. I didn't know ministry of testing also started online and then went into person. Is that how you would prefer it? Where like you kind of, you know, in-person events are somewhat risky because like your whole, you organize this event and, you know, what if nobody shows up? Versus like online community, you're kind of building that up. And then once you have momentum, that's when you're kind of either create a meetups or actually do a conference.
I think it depends. I think it's hard to, separate the two these days with technology. So you need technology to promote any kind of event you do. And when you use tech, you can use tech in a way that builds in community without actually having a community platform. So, it really depends on the mindset of how you approach things.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've been talking about indie hackers. I know it's a big community, online community. I didn't know they also do meetups. Just for the audience who might not be familiar with it, how massive is the indie hackers community? Is it like a few thousand or a few million people registered online?
I don't have the exact number. It's something like 130,000 maybe now. People. Yeah, something around that. I don't really pay too much attention to the exact stats, to be honest.
Interesting. What kind of stats are you looking at as a community manager at Indie Hackers? Are you looking at like comments, threads? What particular like thing do you measure the health of the indie hacking community?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we want to grow, and we've got like certain kind of targets to hit. And the targets to achieve, they kind of change as the community changes. We're not really held over them like strictly. It's more like as a guidance saying, okay, let's try this. This is where we're going to focus our growth on. And it's more to, I guess, help keep the team focused on what we should be doing rather than getting distracted working on other things. Actively, we want more page views and visits. We want the podcast to grow more. We want our email list to grow, and from the community aspect, we're very much keeping an eye on how many people register daily or over a period of time, how many people are commenting, how many new posts there are. There's one more I can't quite remember at the moment, but so it's just basically kind of looking at those trends almost on a daily basis for the comments and the number of posts, just to get a feel for what's happening in the community. We've got a kind of Slack bot that pings us the data every day, and that just helps us, or mostly helps me. It's only me that kind of manages the community, and it just helps me get a feel for how busy things are, if there's a big drop or a big increase. It might, give me a reason to kind of investigate, what's happening. Have I missed something? And, things like that. So,
that totally makes sense. I want to bring up a tweet that you sent out I think in July. It's one of your most popular tweets on your Twitter. You said that everyone wants to start a community, but very few wants to put in the work. It's such a great and interesting point, because I've been talking to a few marketers and they say, community is a great way to build a competitive advantage. But I'm curious for you, for marketers who might not be familiar, what is the value of building a community, whether that's the community on its own, but maybe also building a community around brands like we've seen with HubSpot before with inbound marketing, or with what Drift is doing with the events that they're doing? What are the benefits of community?
For me, it's like just being around, or creating a kind of, I guess, network or place that people just care about what you're doing, and you've got something of similar interest. And obviously, it's like you can measure community in certain ways, but if you really like care about the community, you're gonna have to look beyond like the typical metrics that marketers and salespeople tend to, you know, look at. You know, it's more than clicks. It's, you know, it's much deeper than that. It's like, you know, conversing and developing trust and relationships with real people. And there's just so much of that that you can't measure. And that's, I think, where a lot of people, you know, end up saying like community is like one of the biggest moats that you can have. And if you look at like the best communities out there, they have this really strong connection with each other where the founders of the community almost, you know, unselfishly put their own needs to the side to focus in on what's right for the community as a whole. And it's not easy because, you know, like with Ministry of Testing, we did events and, you know, one of the, you know, biggest revenue generator for events tends to be sponsorship, but we turned away so much sponsorship because we had our ethics and our guides of things that we didn't want to do because we thought it wouldn't be good for the community. So, you know, we didn't have things like exhibition booths and stands or halls and things like that. And those are the things that bring in lots of revenue for events. But we always said no. And we said the same for like speaker slots. It's like, you know, every speaker came from the community. There were no sales slots ever. I never got off from stage myself to speak because I, you know, for me, it wasn't about me. So, you know, it's things like that, that it's like, you know, always think, for me, it's like always trying to think about who your community are and what you can do for them and kind of trust that, that it will grow in time. And, you know, I grew Ministry of Testing without any advertising budget at all. It's completely, you know, bootstrapped and just through the community and everybody kind of recommending it. And, you know, I've been terrible at SEO and stuff like that, but, you know, people find it. And it's kind of the same for indie hackers, to be honest, you know. Obviously, it's funded by Stripe, but the budget is still, you know, pretty, you know, it's not, you know, a massive budget that, you know, they don't go spending, you know, lots of money on ads. It's, you know, still a really small team that runs it at the moment. And we're trying to just be as efficient as we can with what we have.
That totally makes sense. And I think you're already starting to lead towards it about the work. The other side to that tweet that you posted up is that, you know, everybody wants a community. You talked about the moat. You talked about how, you know, this can build that trust. That was the word you said. Around your company or your brand. But the other side to that tweet is very few actually want to put in the work to it. So what is the work involved? Maybe let's start off with like actually starting from scratch, which you did for Ministry of Testing. What do people need to think about to build a community from scratch?
Yeah, I mean, I have a saying that I kind of use at the moment. It's like study your people. So it's like, you know, spending time hanging out with your people, because, you know, that's the right thing to do. Just like you would go and if you were going to, you know, get to know people in your local community, you'd go and hang out with them and maybe have a few drinks or go out for dinner or, you know, whatever it is. It's like you can take that idea, and take it online to communities as well. It's like, how do you hang out with your people? How do you get to know them? How can you, find out what they're reading and, you know, be the one to like truly understand what they're talking about. How can you, talk the lingo that they talk and understand what they're on about, the pains and the frustrations that we live day to day. And the only way to find all of that out is to study them and kind of be with them, in my opinion. And if you can't be bothered to do that, in my opinion, you shouldn't start a community.
That's
the hard part about it. It's you know, like with me at Indie Hackers now, it's like my head is deep into the indie hacking world. And it's the same with Cortland. It's like our minds are just like always on what do indie hackers need? What are they doing? How can we help them? And that's like,
that's good. Yeah.
You know, with our work, that's like what we're always like trying to figure out.
Yeah, so that's a great first advice. You know, like hang out with your people, understand what they need, understand what they want, what are they looking for. So once you figure that out, how do you kick it off? How do you like start off with thinking about building a forum, or whether that's an 8% event? What's next for building that community?
Yeah, so when you hang out with your people, you know what they want, and then you can make decisions for them. That's how I see it. So it's like a lot of like startups or indie hackers, they tend to think, well, how can I validate an idea? But when it comes to community, it's like, sure, you can validate stuff and you can ask people their opinions. It's kind of like the mom test. You can ask people their opinions, or will they pay for this, or won't they? But you'll never get like the true answer. The only way you'll figure out how to build something is to experiment and to try. But because you've spent time hanging with them and studying them, you get to have the chance to make decisions for them from all the knowledge that you've gathered that likely no one else has spent that time studying it as deep as you have. And it's kind of like, you know, just an experiment, a hypothesis. And that's, you know, kind of what I've done with, or what I did with Ministry of Testing, is that I was in that world for, you know, as a tester previously, and then as a, you know, leading the community. And there were no events for testers. So I was like, this is what testers need. So I'm going to create an event that I think they need, and that I will think will have a long-term positive impact for the software testing industry. I didn't ask them. I mean, I think I brought it up a few times and people always said, no, I won't attend that. No, I won't pay money for that. But, you know, they did. So I just stopped asking. And I just started like doing stuff that I thought
interesting.
They would, you know, find valuable.
When we come back in just a moment, Rosie shares her principles and process to building a vibrant community. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. Now, 42 Agency works with high-growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. They've worked with some amazing companies like OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogic, FlexDay, and more. And to top it off, I actually know the founder of 42 Agency, Camille Rexton, and he knows his stuff. So go reach out to him. He's actually offering a free $500 consulting time for Grow Today listeners. You can visit them at growtoday.fm/42 or find the link in the description. It'll redirect to this special offer. One more thing, don't forget to download the free Grow Cheat Sheet for this episode. It has all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can take all the actionable tips from this episode and apply it to your business to accelerate the growth even faster. You can find the link in the description of this show. Download it now before I take it away, because it'll only be up until next week. Well, now about this, let's jump back into my chat with Rosie. In terms of the specific details, let's say for mainly online community, that how do you think about, and I think I saw a tweet about this as well, like what kind of tools do you use? Like how do you build like a form or things like that? What are your thoughts on what tools that community builders use to start off building that community? Let's say just online.
Yeah, everybody loves to jump straight to the tool. That's
the problem. Yeah, that's true.
They don't say, oh, how should I get to know my people? They say, what tool should I use? Without even know what tools their people like to use, you know, as a typical example. I struggle with this to one extent. From one extent, there's, you know, lack of tools that I think are good. I mean, I kind of like discourse, but, you know, it's getting a bit old on like the visual aspect of things. You know, I wish it was just a bit better, but I like discourse for the fact that it's got that kind of longevity in content, and that, you know, the long history of content, I think is quite important for a lot of communities. There's quite a few tools that are coming onto the market, like Circle, that, you know, seem like they do the job. You know, there's a few people using them and it does the job, and, you know, it's fine. It's like, it works for a subset of people. I started Ministry of Testing and hosted a Ning. I don't know if anyone would remember Ning, but it was basically a hosted community forum. And, you know, it served me, it got me from A to B. I think I probably used it for like, 8-9 years before we moved off of it onto something else. But then once Ministry of Testing like got to a certain point, we started like building with our own tech. But then I also have like the experience of like working at Indie Hackers where everything is custom built. And I kind of love that. And with that experience and, you know, with the experience of Ministry of Testing and then the whole indie hacking perspective is like, there's so many people, building, you know, trying to build their own SaaS. But when they go to community, the first thing they do is jump to a tool to solve a problem now without really having that long-term, vision of what that community could be. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's no right or wrong. And it's like, you know, you can pick up a tool and get a community started, which, you know, will serve you for a while. But for me, I kind of think of like the next community I would build is that I can't build a community with a third party tool because I would find it too restrictive. But I also realize that's a slower path, but at the same time with community, sometimes it's better to take the slower path and just take your time building things up. But yeah, I love Indie Hackers for that. Just, you know, the stuff that Cortland builds in is, you know, pretty amazing, to be honest. And that's what makes it special. And if you look at like Dribbble, you know, that's, a great community and that's custom built. Like, you know, the best, communities out there are custom built. They're not built, using third party tools.
Yeah. Now to come to think about it, even Growth Hackers was that custom built thing that they created with that, online community that they have.
Yeah.
What are you, and this might totally get emotional or get angry at this, but what do you think about Slack communities? Because I've been part of Slack communities and I've lost. like what is happening? Like, what are your thoughts about building community on Slack?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, it's like, if it gets you from A to B, then it's okay. But obviously, yeah. Like you lose the history pretty quickly, and that's really, you know, I can't bear that. It really, it's just so wrong. I mean, I'm on Lenny's Slack. You know, Lenny has Lenny's newsletter. He has the Slack as you know, like an add-on to his newsletter, and that's pretty nice. You know, it's got a nice vibe to it. And I've gotten value out of it, so. I mean, it depends, you know, I think it really depends on the kind of community that you want. Again, for me, I think over it more long term. So, and like Cortland as well, he refuses to have a Slack for Indie Hackers. and we have one for Ministry of Testing and it's got like, you know, 11,000-12,000 members.
Shoot,
but that's a lot. But it's a distraction at the same time. So yes, it brings value, but it takes them away from the actual forum, and it then makes it harder for us to gain traction on the forum.
Interesting.
But people use it and they love it. So it's like, you know, what can you do?
That's funny. You've already mentioned it a few times about having a long-term vision for your community or thinking long-term. What do you mean by that? And how can people, instead of like thinking, you said it too, like instead of thinking about tool, think about the long-term vision for your community. How can people think about it? And what are some things that they need to think about when building a community from the beginning?
I've been thinking about it recently more in terms of like you know how you have a digital garden. So people like build up their websites or resource and, you know, they build it with the long-term view of like they're adding value constantly to their website. They're, you know, either adding notes or blog posts or, you know, it's not necessarily about about the blog post being at the front. That's the value. It's like the whole website as a whole that they can look back upon or use or other people can use. So more recently, I've been thinking about communities as like a community digital garden. It's like, how can you create that long-term value for community members where they can come and search for things and get value from things that have happened almost, you know, sometimes going back years and years. Instead of, you know, like you say, Slack, you know, you lose that value almost straight away. So, you know, that's how I'm thinking of communities, but that's, you know, it doesn't mean that's right for every community, but because the types of communities that I tend to get involved with are kind of like communities of practice, it kind of aligns with that kind of thinking. It's like, everything's so short term now, but we can win by, I guess, maybe the long tail aspect of it, by, you know, constantly adding value and making it, the community searchable and making, creating habits where it's not like with a digital garden, it would just be you as an individual maintaining it. But imagine if the whole community maintained something.
Yeah, it's like a community garden.
And everybody contributed to that long term. It could be amazing. But to, you know, build that with a third party tool, again, you know, this is what I go back to. It would be very hard to do that. But if you build it, you know, if you with a long term view and potentially self building it in mind, then those are the kind of things that you could potentially achieve. And to me, that's kind of like the exciting aspect of it.
I love that. I love that visual of a garden. Like you can build your own garden. But what if, I've heard of community gardens where everybody's like planting and watering it and growing it together. There's a sense of not just like this belongingness, but there's a sense of ownership.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard, is it? I'm edging towards that with indie hackers, hopefully. But it's hard when people come in with like self-promotional stuff. And, you know, it's hard to balance that out. And we've got kind of no issue with self-promotional stuff, but you know, it's like there needs to be a balance, or, you know, it needs to be, you know, like, you know, sure, talk about yourself, but do it in a useful and educational way. and some people do it well. You know, there are people that do it well. Like Harry Dry does it really well. You know, just everywhere basically, but on Indie Hackers as well. And I think Daniel Vassallo did it recently as well. You know, they focus on like bringing value to the platform that they're on. And that's what more community members need to do. And you know, it takes practice, but those are like our ideal kind of members. You know, they're focused on helping out as you know, as well as like serving themselves a bit, but you know, there's a bit of give and take.
Interesting. That kind of leads me to the question about how do you manage that community? Let's say there's, you know, do you, I'm sure there's rules, but like community rules that you would have, but let's say somebody just keep posting up, you know, promotional stuff where they see that forum now as their channel to post up their latest blog posts or things like that. They're not really adding value to the community. How do you make sure that doesn't like your online community doesn't become a self-promoting place versus like actually having conversations with each other?
Yeah, I mean, there's like a few strategies that you can use. One thing that we do at Indie Hackers is we try to promote the best content that there is. So the best, you know, the posts that we value the most end up going the homepage. Yeah, it is like it used to be all like manual. People didn't realize that until recently, but there is you know, it is automated now, but there is some manual control, so we do get to remove things that we don't believe should be there, or we push stuff that we think is valuable that hasn't perhaps gotten noticed, and that's to, you know, to try, basically we're trying to get people to, you know, see what we believe is the best content and hopefully mimic the same kind of posts. Because in community building, people tend to mimic. They don't read the rules. They just look around and they copy what other people are doing.
Yeah.
occasionally, like, I'm trying better to also write things. I struggle to find the time, to be honest, but I try to write things as well in the same kind of angle as, like, the type of content that I think people would benefit from reading, and in the hope that people mimic it. Occasionally I'll, like, write stuff I did one today, actually. Well, I get a bit frustrated that there's, like, not enough of the content that I want to see. So I'll write something that will hopefully edge people towards a. And today I wrote one about leaving a legacy. It's like, think about the legacy that you're leaving behind here at Indie Hackers, and think of how people in the future will appreciate what you've posted, and use that in mind when you're kind of participating here and just anywhere you are. In the hope that people will take notice and think, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't post that, and maybe I should post this kind of thing.
That's so good. That's really a great advice. One other question I had was about growing that community. Once you've had that initial, like, early adopters, how do you grow the number of members or the number of community members to that? Do you do promotional events, or, like, I'm guessing you don't want to run ads. That's probably not a good idea, but, like, maybe word of mouth is probably the biggest way to the community grows. Like, what are some strategies you have to grow a community?
To be honest, like, I think, like, the most underrated thing is just to do your best to serve your current people, and then it will grow naturally. And quite often you don't exactly know why it's growing, but it is, and accept that you don't know why, and that's okay. I think growth people try to overanalyze things, and they might analyze their landing page and try to figure out reasons why it is or isn't converting, and I'm just, like, so done with that. I'm just like, I don't care.
It's growing. It's working.
It's working. Does it matter? We're doing the right things. You can't measure it, but saying that as well, it's like, in my early days, like, ministry of testing, I had I created like a LinkedIn group, for ministry of testing, and that helped the community grow massively, because, naturally testers hang out on LinkedIn as well, and they would stumble across a group there, and then they would find us, our community on our website. So, I think a lot of it can be done by, knowing the trends that are happening and showing up in certain places as they're happening. After the group, we only, like, in the past couple of years, we started a LinkedIn page. And that has done really well, actually. It's got like 50,000 followers for some reason. And I think it's a lot of it is just because we did it at the right time. And I posted a few things that kind of did well, and then I just kept doing that. But now, it doesn't mean it will work for everyone now. I just think LinkedIn just was supporting certain kind of posts at the time. I think it's, just keeping in tune with things that are happening and looking for opportunities. With Indie Hackers, I've done it with Twitter recently. So I've, doubled Twitter in the past 12 months or so just by engaging with the community. I am very much growth focused, but at the same time, I don't, get obsessed by the numbers.
Makes sense. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I think you're right. I think that's such a tweetable quote right there. Like, growth people they overanalyze things when it's working. Just go. I want to shift gears and talk about how COVID and this pandemic has affected communities, and it doesn't have to be in person. Like you said, even Indie Hackers were doing meetups, but Ministry of Testing, they were for that. They were, it's mainly driven through conferences. Like, what are some things that you're doing right now to not people can't meet up face to face, but are you doubling down on online? Like, what are some things that you've been doing since this whole thing happened?
Yeah, I mean, Ministry of Testing, I'm not really involved day to day, but. I still own it, and I still get, you know, insight into things that are happening. But they basically, you know, 70% of the revenue came from events. So, you know, it's not, you know, an ideal situation for us. So, for, you know, it's, there's no point hiding it. But we had already had like traction. We had already built like a membership platform. And we had kept meaning to like focus in on that, but we kept getting distracted with online events. I mean, offline events, because they, you know, they were providing us revenue, to, you know, pay our staff and stuff. But then obviously, you know, COVID happens and it's like, you know, I guess at the end of the day, we had to double down on it and change completely, and figure things out. And it's a mess, to be honest. It's a mess, and it's not fun. You know, I feel for the team. It's, you know, not only like are they having to really quickly change their strategy, it's like there's a lot of admin complications in, you know, with it. Like, you know, what do you do with the people who book tickets, and how do you manage it? And then how do you manage the accounts aspect of it? And how do you manage the communication angle going forward of what we're going to do now, and how do you get people on board, and then how do you get people to value the online events when there's so many online events happening now? You know, it's tough. It's you know, it's not easy. So you know, I don't, you know, I don't know what to say, but you know, I would hope that the moat, the community moat that Ministry of Testing has, is strong enough to kind of help the team see through it. And, you know, I hope people will step up and see value in the things that they're now doing online. But they've basically taken the angle is that there's not going to be any physical events for years to come. So it all has to be online now. So it's tough. And then there's like Indie Hackers, which is different. Because, I mean, it had like meetups, but they were, you know, all volunteer run. So some of those meetups are still happening, like online. But we got a massive boost in traffic from, you know, since kind of March time. Everything just went a bit nuts. And we're like, whoa, what's happening here? it's calmed down a bit now, but you know, I'm still unsure like what's going to happen next. So, you know, we'll see. It's, you know, I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen.
Sure.
Yeah, we're trying to deal with it as best as we can.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that even a lot of industries they're not sure what's happening next. You know, hopefully things, you know, we get the vaccine and it becomes a lot smoother after that. I want to start wrapping up and just want to ask you, you've given so many advice in this last 40 minutes that we've been chatting with. If you could summarize it, what are some 2 to 3 takeaways that you would like to give to marketers who are interested in building and growing a community? What would those like 1, 2, or 3 takeaways that you'd want them to go with?
I would say don't build a community just because everyone else is. That's like the biggest, you know, it's like if you want to build, yeah, you have to like be in it for the long term and not expect. I mean, I guess on top of that, it's like if you do build a community, don't measure it by the like growth tactics or, you know, measurements that are typically used. It's like you have to, you know, look at community different and respect the people that you're, you know, building the community with. And I think that's what most of it comes down to. So if you're going to build a community, respect the people that you're building it with, because I think that's the only way for the future. It's like, you know, we're all people and humans.
That's such a good advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And just as a final question, where can people find out more about you and your work and Indie Hackers? Like, do you want them to follow you on Twitter, add you on LinkedIn? Do you have a newsletter? I saw Lenny-san. Lenny said it's one of the best Substack. I saw that. It was like, okay, cool. That's the major props. But where can people set up for your newsletter? Like, this is your call to action. Tell people where to go after this episode about community building or about you.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that he wouldn't have said that if I hadn't joined his community. So, you know, there's the value in joining other people's communities and in joining them for good reasons. So, you know, I also did plant that seed with him intentionally.
He agreed. Kind of,
yeah, he couldn't say that there are no other community building newsletters out there that he knows of, I don't think. So he could only mention mine. I cornered him. That's my gross tactic there. Corner
That's
people.
Good. Good. Forced their head.
Yeah. So yeah, I run a Substack newsletter. It's rosyland.substack.com. You can also get to it via rosy.land. So I write about all things community building. There's a couple of I do a couple of posts every week. One is like a curated post of links that go out that I research and study. Just like I've mentioned, I study really hard about the, you know, the community building world, and I share that with the paid subscribers. And then I also write an article every week about community building. It's really tough. I don't know why I did it, but it's really tough. But yeah, go check it out.
And on Twitter, like people can follow you also. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Rosie Sherry on Twitter. The same on LinkedIn. Basically, Rosie Sherry, like everywhere on social.
Nice. That's good. That's consistency. That's awesome. Branding. Well, thank you so much for your time, Rosie. I really, really do appreciate it. You really shed the light about community for me, which I have zero knowledge on community building, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
It deserves. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode. I learned so much from Rosie. Like I said, I have zero knowledge about building community until I listened to this. And I know, talking to my other colleagues, that building a community is really can be that competitive advantage that, as Rosie said, a moat that you can apply to your business. So I want to remind you just to download the free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode. I actually put it all together so that you could enjoy it, apply it to your business, and help accelerate the growth of your company even faster. Seriously, why take notes about this episode when you can just steal mine? Go to growthtoday.fm/113 to get it now. You can also find that link in the description. And I want to remind you, I am taking this away when I publish the next episode. So you got until next week to get it before I take this one away forever. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thanks to 42 Agency. They work with high growth B2B SaaS companies, helping them build and scale revenue and marketing operations that accelerate demand generation and pipeline growth. To learn more and get free $500 in consulting time, you can visit them at growthtoday.fm/42, or you can find the link in the description. Please also support me. There's three easy ways. First, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts so other people can find out more about this show. Second, you can share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn, or tell a friend about this podcast. This is how podcast shows grow, is through word of mouth. And third, you can join the Grow Today mailing list. You'll get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you, so you don't have to keep downloading it over and over again. I'll just email it to you directly. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing. Passion, 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 passion.